Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the center of oddity and the supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spooktacular people. Welcome to this 528th episode of the History Goes Bump podcast, ghost tours for the theater of the mind. I am your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we're going to be talking about something that was suggested by one of our young listeners, Colin Weaver.
Looking forward to it.
He can't spend a lot of time in these locations because they're casinos. He wanted to hear about some haunted Vegas casinos. So that's what we're going to be doing on this episode. I used to love going to Las Vegas when I was younger. As a matter of fact, in my early 20s, I went on a road trip all by myself. I went down through New Mexico and over to Arizona, and then I went up and I went to Las Vegas and spent 3 days there on my own.
Party animal.
And I used to have a shot glass collection. And while I was there, I got shot glasses from three of the locations we're going to be talking about. I have this one from Circus Circus. Really loved that place, even as a kid.
Excellent.
And then I also have the Venetian.
Love it.
And this is the one in specifically that Colin wanted us to talk about, the Luxor.
Very nice.
Yeah. So those are my really cool shot glasses from that trip that I took out there. So we're looking forward to bringing that to everyone. Before we get into that, we want to welcome into the Spooktacular crew, Shanae and Kylotoe. What an interesting name. Kylotoe.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining our spooktacular crew.
And now, this moment in oddity.
The moment in oddity was suggested by Michael Rogers. Waterways around the world are routinely dredged to reduce the sediment that can impede water flow. Dredging is the process of removing mud, sand, weeds, and trash from a river, harbor, or any body of water. In mid-January 2024, there was a surprising discovery while dredging a river in Poland. The incredible find was a sword, estimated to be over 1,000 years old. The Provincial Office for the Protection of Monuments was immediately contacted, and the sword was transported to the city of Torun. The preservation of the archaeological artifact was rushed, and research on the object will proceed from there. Although several news outlets reported that the sword is of Viking origin, archaeologist Robert Grochowski is skeptical of the theory. Grochowski stated that, without detailed research, this idea is completely unjustified. It is difficult to say anything more than the fact that it is an early medieval sword. Just because the sword is engraved with Scandinavian patterns doesn't automatically mean that the artifact is of Viking origin. Only once the research has been completed will we have a clearer answer. Once the study is finished, it is expected that the sword will be returned to Wrocław to be displayed at the city's history museum. Dredging the depths of dark debris-littered waterways only to discover a medieval treasure certainly is odd.
And here's another unique podcast I'd love you to check out.
Hi, friends. Welcome to Season 5 of The Activity Continues, a paranormal podcast. I'm Amy, the producer and host of this show, along with Megan and the other Amy. We are three soul friends who love to talk about the Dead Files TV show, along with other spooky and spooky adjacent things.
Hi, everyone. I'm Megan, our resident scaredy cat. I love this stuff, but it absolutely terrifies me.
Hey, everyone. I'm the other Amy, sometimes referred to as Amy, ABP, or AP. And I'm the voice of reason in the chaos, trying to keep these two spooky, goofy, lovely ladies in line. We're creating a community of like-minded friends who love to discuss all things paranormal. Come join us where
the activity continues.
And now, this month in history.
In the month of March, on the 1st, in 1904, American big band leader Glenn Miller was born in Clarinda, Iowa. His music is synonymous with the World War II era. His prowess as a musician led him to drop out of the University of Colorado to begin his musical career. In 1925, Miller was hired as a trombonist to play with Ben Pollock's orchestra. Later, he began freelancing his musical arrangements and trombone skills with bands like Benny Goodman, the Dorsey Brothers, and many others. Eventually, Glenn studied musical theory under Joseph Schillinger, which led to Miller's advancement of the instrumentation of his pieces later on. After the disbandment of his first orchestra, Glenn immediately started a new group. The sound was unique, and this was the start of what would bring him lasting fame. He was quoted saying, "A band ought to have a sound all of its own. It ought to have a personality." He created that effect by having a clarinet play the melody, doubled by a tenor saxophone playing an octave lower and other saxes in harmonic support. The band's success took off from there, performing in casinos, ballrooms, and even playing on national radio broadcasts. At the end of 1939, Miller's band was given their own radio show that was broadcast three times a week, from hits like In the Mood, Moonlight Serenade, to the big band's recording of Chattanooga Choo Choo for the 1941 movie Sun Valley Serenade, Glenn Miller's orchestra had many iconic pieces that people are still enjoying today, including us, Kelly.
Yes, indeed. The glowing lights of Las Vegas have always beckoned those seeking expression for their seedy sides. This place is the capital of entertainment and a good time. Las Vegas plays host to more than just the living, though. A city like Las Vegas is the perfect setting for ghostly activity. There are a number of casinos here in Sin City that are reputedly haunted. Join us as we explore the history and hauntings of some Las Vegas casinos.
Las Vegas means the meadows in Spanish. The Las Vegas Valley was oasis-like and contained springs that were only known to Native Americans until a scout named Rafael Rivera came upon the area while searching for water. Around 14 years after Rivera's discovery, John C. Fremont led an expedition out to the west, and his group camped at Las Vegas Springs in 1844. This was one of four expeditions he led. Fremont was an interesting character in history. In 1847, he was appointed military governor of California. He was court-martialed for mutiny and insubordination, and later during the Civil War, he was relieved of his position by President Lincoln for insubordination as well. Despite these things, he was really popular with the American public, and he went on to become a multimillionaire and a senator for California. He later moved to New York and became an active abolitionist who ran on the Republican ticket in 1856. I had no idea that Fremont had been a Republican.
Oh, I didn't either.
I didn't even think that the Republican Party was there yet, because President Lincoln, I thought, was the first, I guess he'd be the first Republican president who won. I thought he was the first to run. The second most famous street in Vegas is named for Fremont. The first, of course, is the Las Vegas Strip. Both of these streets are home to Vegas's world-famous casinos, and we're going to talk about specifically the ones that have haunts connected to them. We have done a previous episode in which we featured the Flamingo and Bally's. We're going to update those on this one, specifically because Bally's no longer exists, but we'll talk about them and then we'll get into some of the other haunts. We're going to start with the Flamingo.
Gangsters were very involved with the casinos and the mob ran Las Vegas back in the 1940s. The Flamingo is the oldest operating casino on the Strip and was built by none other than Bugsy Siegel. The casino cost him $6 million to build and opened in 1946 under the name the Pink Flamingo Hotel and Casino. Originally, the property was owned by Charles Pop Squires. He was one of Vegas's first settlers. Margaret Folsom bought the property from him in 1944 and then sold it to Billy Wilkerson. He was planning on building a resort that would be the finest in town, but the war caused supplies and building materials to soar. And Wilkerson soon ran into financial issues. Bugsy and his gang had come to Vegas for gambling, and when they heard Wilkerson was having problems with finances, they posed as businessmen and bought a 2/3 share of the project.
Can you imagine Bugsy Siegel managing to pull off a businessman?
No. The Flamingo was built in the Art Deco and streamlined modern styles, with George Vernon Russell as the architect. Some of Wilkerson's design ideas would become staples at casinos. The idea for no clocks and no windows in the casinos was his, as well as the fact that even non-gamblers have to walk through the casino to register and get around the hotel.
So they're trying to make you become a gambler.
Brilliant.
Just put a little coin into the machine and pull the arm and see what happens. And, you know, I never realized, I've been in many casinos in my time, that there are no clocks around. You do notice there's no windows because it's just walls of things. But I never thought about how they kind of programmed it that way so that you wouldn't be aware that, oh gosh, I've been sitting here for 10 hours at this machine.
Exactly. When the finances dwindled and Bugsy and his partners were brought on, another architect was hired named Richard Stadelman. Del Webb became the contractor. The hotel opened with 105 rooms, tennis courts, a 9-hole golf course, and a trap shooting range. There was a habitat built for flamingos that was a garden courtyard. The Flamingo did not receive its name for Bugsy, but rather Wilkerson gave the casino its name when he first started designing the building.
Which makes sense, because I wouldn't really believe that Bugsy would go with the name of, let's call it the Flamingo. Bugsy may have been good at running criminal enterprises, but he had real issues running a legitimate hotel and casino. During building, which was still ongoing even after the casino officially opened, cost overruns reached $4 million. The grand opening of the Flamingo was a complete flop, and the casino lost $300,000 in its first 2 weeks, because without completed rooms for people to stay in, they took their winnings elsewhere.
Oh, man.
So they're winning all the money, and then they're like, well, we can't stay here, so let's go over there, we'll have some drinks, dinner, and get a room. Business was so bad that Bugsy closed the Flamingo. He finished construction and reopened in March 1947 with a much better reception. Despite the Flamingo running a profit, investors were not happy. They wanted bigger returns, and since most of these investors were other mobsters like Lucky Luciano, Bugsy was in hot water. A meeting was called in Havana, and Bugsy completely lost his temper and stormed out. Not a good idea with the mob. As one would expect, a hit was ordered on Bugsy, and he was killed while sitting on a couch in the home of his girlfriend on June 20th, 1947. At the same time, several mobsters walked into the Flamingo and took over operations peacefully. The killing of Bugsy would make national news, and suddenly, everybody wanted to come to exciting Las Vegas. Hey, mobsters are killing each other. Let's go.
That cracks me up.
The Flamingo changed ownership and names many times along the way, including becoming the Flamingo Hilton under the Hilton Corporation for some time. Harrah's Entertainment was next, and Caesars Entertainment is the current owner. The hotel has expanded over the years and hosted countless performers.
Bugsy Siegel invested a lot of time and money into the Flamingo, so it's not surprising that he would want to stick around in the afterlife, and he has. He is seen most often as a full-bodied apparition in the presidential suite that he designed with bulletproof windows and 5 exits.
I love it. Who needs 5 exits to get out of a room unless you think you might be under fire at some point and have to escape?
A mobster.
Yes.
He is also seen near the pool. There's a memorial for him in the garden, and occasionally his spirit has lurked there as well. A cleaning lady quit after seeing Bugsy's ghost on the 5th floor.
Next up, we have the Horseshoe Las Vegas, which had been known as Bally's Casino. This is a very recent change. I had no idea that Bally's was gone.
I didn't either.
And of course, there is a horseshoe casino that's down on Fremont Street. And that's Binion's Horseshoe.
Right.
First, when I saw this, I went, no, 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 it's not there. And then I went, oh, there's another one. This originally started as the Three Coins Motel. Is that like how much it costs to get a room?
Probably.
Three coins. I hope it's dimes. Pennies? That had opened in 1963. That business was short-lived, and the Bonanza Hotel and Casino was built on the property in 1967. In 1973, the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino was opened in place of the Bonanza. It had 2,084 rooms, making it the biggest hotel in the world at the time. Can you imagine that being the biggest? That's like chump change nowadays. And it cost $106 million to build, and that's back in the 70s. Kirk Kerkorian was the owner, and he loved the movies, and he owned MGM, so that's where the name came from. The decor reflected Hollywood, and it had two large theaters. It became the standard for Las Vegas. The grand opening was attended by Cary Grant and Gregory Peck. Dean Martin opened the showroom. When going to the MGM, everyone dressed to the nines. A fountain with a giant statue of Zeus was installed. People stepped down into the casino, which was relatively quiet, and they could take elevators down into the shopping area that had the most high-end shops of anywhere. A 300-seat movie theater was down there as well, with blue leather plush love seats and couches. There were tables at each seat with red call buttons.
Everything was wonderful until November 21st, 1980. A fire started in one of the restaurants early in the morning and made its way up into the hotel. Tragically, 85 people were killed, mostly from smoke inhalation. The number could have been higher as there were 5,000 people in the hotel at the time. 1,000 people were rescued from the roof alone. There were no fire sprinklers in the casino. And if it hadn't been for the opening in the stairwells and elevator shafts and faulty smoke dampers in the ventilation system, the smoke might not have reached up into the hotel's tower, which is where most of the deaths occurred. New fire standards were created after what was the worst disaster in Nevada history and the third worst hotel fire in modern U.S. history. The MGM Grand was rebuilt in 8 months. In 1985, the hotel was sold to the Bally Entertainment Corporation for $594 million and renamed to Bally's. The Hilton Hotels Corporation bought Bally's in 1995. Hilton eventually formed their casino holdings under Caesars Entertainment, Inc., and it bought Bally's in 2005. The casino became Horseshoe Las Vegas, named after Binion's Horseshoe in 2022.
The upper floors at Horseshoe Las Vegas report the most activity, which started almost immediately after the big fire. Full-bodied apparitions have been seen many times. The disembodied sound of weeping and screaming is heard. The acrid smell of smoke is reported many times, and the occasional fire alarm goes off for no reason in particular. A service elevator in the North Tower was the scene of several employees' deaths. Modern-day employees claim that they all avoid the elevator at all costs because of the strange occurrences that happen with that elevator.
Casino-goers have reported seeing a strange misty smoke in a corner that seems to be enveloping a woman. This apparition has actually been witnessed playing the slot machines before disappearing.
At least it's having fun before it takes off.
Good grief. A bluish-green spirit that appears to be disoriented has been seen. A comment at TripAdvisor states, "The hotel was good, and the location is right in the middle of the strip. I had a nice room on the 23rd floor. The only odd thing was that at 6:30 one morning, I observed a woman standing in my room for about 3 minutes until she slowly faded away."
I love that. They just tell it like, "The only odd thing is
La-di-da.
My door key didn't work for the first couple times I tried to use it."
"No, the only odd thing, I saw a full-bodied apparition."
She hung around for 3 minutes. I mean, 3 minutes is a long time, especially if you got a ghost standing there.
Yeah, he's saying it so blasé.
You could have a full-on conversation in 3 minutes.
One of Horseshoe's most active apparitions is that of a young boy. He is heard in the corridor of the 17th floor calling out for his mother. On the same floor, an elderly couple are witnessed walking down the hall, and they just disappear. The man has his arm wrapped protectively around the woman.
Another commenter at TripAdvisor had stayed on the 23rd floor and found the experience harrowing. "I had no clue about what I was getting into. I upgraded to a renovated room on the 23rd floor. Initially, I was happy about the room until I encountered weird things that took place in early a.m. 3. I had the worst 4 sleeps ever. My wife had her first night terror ever. She was facing the wall, yelling and screaming at the top of her lungs so loud I jumped out of bed, clutching my chest. She was yelling stuff like, 'Oh my God,' and 'Leave me alone,' and was running towards the door. The screams coming from her were so loud that I thought security was going to be called. I was so frightened that I had a hard time breathing for like 45 minutes. This was the first time in her life she'd had a night terror. Other weird things were chills running through my body constantly. It started from my head and would go through my body out of my feet and cycle through repeatedly. I travel a lot and I thought this was weird, so I decided to go talk to customer service and I asked them of their history about this room. She assured me that she had no recollection of anything on that room recently and offered us to stay on a much lower floor. I declined because I wanted to still have a bar fridge and I don't believe in ghosts or supernatural stuff and convinced myself it was probably a bad dream that she has no memory of. My wife and I returned to the 23rd floor, and as I exited the elevator, I made a comment to her that was what you would do if there was a fire here. I never made comments like that before. Again, I continued to have chills. The bar fridge made banging noises and it felt weird. The last night, as I couldn't sleep, I looked over at the curtains and saw clear air waving movements in the corner. I didn't want to look anymore, so I slammed my eyes shut and prayed. Then as I started to fall asleep, I had a bad dream and woke up instantly. It was about a man running frantically, that I thought he was chasing me but was running for water like a calm ocean but was running fast in panic on the shoreline. I thought all this was crazy and had explanations like the AC was what gave me shivers and the night terror was from a late meal, etc. When I arrived home, I was curious, so I started to Google things and found out that the 23rd floor is the most haunted, and a fire broke out in 1980 where 85 people perished. I had no knowledge of this before and will now check for histories before I book another hotel.
Well,
probably a good idea. Yeah, a lot of weird stuff.
Right.
And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Next up, we have the Venetian Hotel.
The Venetian Hotel sits where the Sands Hotel and Casino once stood. That casino was demolished in 1996 after it was decided by a new owner that an update was needed desperately. The Sands opened in 1952 under founder Mac Kufferman, with 200 rooms spread out over 4 two-story wings. Crime bosses financed the venture, as did Frank Sinatra, who made his performing debut at the Sands in 1953. Icons of the entertainment industry of the 1950s and 60s performed in the hotel's world-renowned Copa Room.
And yes, it is named for the Copacabana.
Indeed. These were singers and performers like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Nat King Cole, and Sammy Davis Jr. Those last two pushed back against segregation in Las Vegas. They were allowed to perform, but couldn't eat in the dining room.
You could sing for the people, but no, you can't sit down at the table.
Garbage. Frank Sinatra put a stop to that when he invited Cole to join him for dinner. Harry Belafonte was later allowed at the casino and became the first black man to play cards on the Vegas Strip. The original Ocean's 11 was filmed at the Sands in 1960. By 1966, the Sands had a 500-room tower added, and the following year, Howard Hughes acquired the casino. Sheldon Adelson bought the property with some partners, whom he bought out, and then he closed the casino in 1996.
Construction began on the Venetian in 1997. The casino cost $1.6 billion to build and opened in May of 1999. The name represents its theming, which is based on Venice, Italy during the 1400s and 1500s. 250 artists and sculptors worked on decor, and the exterior has replicas of the Doge's Palace, the Rialto Bridge, St. Mark's Campanile, and Venice's Grand Canal is represented on the exterior and interior, including gondolas. I don't know if they like sit and talk on their cell phones while they're taking you around, because that's what happened to me when I did it in the actual Venice. There's an indoor recreation of St. Mark's Square with shops and eateries. Adelson died in 2021, and the Venetian was sold to Vici Properties for $4 billion, with Apollo Global Management leasing the casino for $2.25 billion.
During construction, there were several deaths. A worker fell in January 1998, with another worker being crushed several months later by an 8,000-pound facade that fell from a crane 32 stories. In 1999, an electrician fell 30 feet through an open hole and died. Those construction workers are said to haunt the hotel, and some claim that former mobsters that like to frequent the sands seem to have carried over to the new casino in the afterlife. Tupac Shakur was shot inside a BMW as it drove near the Venetian in 1996. He would die 4 days later in a hospital, but people claim to see him outside the Venetian with his distinctive bandana tied around his head. He is seen crossing the street towards the casino and is sometimes spotted as a shadow beneath a flickering streetlight.
Ellie wrote on TripAdvisor, "I stayed in suite 4135 right at the end of the corridor with a concrete view at the Venetian," meaning she had no view at all.
Right.
"One of the cheap rooms, even though it was a suite. Not sure if the same room, but things were happening that we couldn't explain. I don't believe in ghosts, but have to admit it was a bit spooky. My friend woke up at about 3 a.m. on our first night there saying someone was in our room. It woke her up by calling her name repeatedly, standing by the window. I looked and saw nothing, told her she was imagining things and go back to bed. She fell asleep, and I watched the window curtains starting to move. Probably a draft from the air conditioning, but only happened that one time." Still a bit strange that she said somebody was over by the window and then the curtain starts moving.
Exactly.
"Next day we woke up, I opened the drawer in our bedside table to see the Holy Bible on my side. I made a joke, said it didn't affect me because God was on my side. She's an atheist, but she moved the Bible to her side." It's like they say there's no atheists in foxholes, right? "The next night we slept right through. In the morning when she woke up, she couldn't find her glasses. Normally she'd put them by the TV so she wouldn't break them accidentally when she's half asleep. They weren't there. She spent a good 10 minutes looking for them when I got the thought of looking in the drawer. We found them on top of the Holy Bible. She blamed me, saying I put them there to freak her out. I didn't. Also, there was a massive lamp there that we couldn't get working. I had the idea that I would turn it on so it could help her sleep on our last night, but I couldn't figure it out. We ended up leaving it off. We got back at about 4 a.m. and the lamp was on. The next day when we woke up, the lamp was off. This trip, I slept like a baby, mainly because if there's any truth about ghosts, the ghost was after Jenny," which must be the name of her friend. So I find it interesting, though, that she basically had this night fright, woke up hearing her name being called, which always freaks me out because, like, how do you know my name? It's got to be intelligent.
Exactly.
And then she puts the Bible over on her side of the bed and everything's okay. Other than the fact that apparently the spirit thought, you know, you're an atheist.
I'm
going
to make a point.
Why don't you read the thing? Here's your glasses. Read it.
Exactly.
It was the spirit of a pastor, maybe. Next up, we have Circus Circus, which was a big hit for me as a kid. Did you like Circus Circus?
I did. And that was actually the first time that Jared ever got to go to Las Vegas with his dad, is when it was a little bit more family friendly. They kind of, in Las Vegas for a time, tried to turn it more family friendly,
yes,
instead of so much Sin City. And that was when he got to go to Circus Circus. He thoroughly enjoyed himself.
You and I probably passed each other while we were
there.
Because that was the time when I really liked to go. Because they had, I mean, they do have a lot of shows now, but they really were catering it to families. They had more family fun things to do, more games for kids. There wasn't as much of the seedy stuff going on the street. And the other thing I loved is they used to have like a full buffet for like $2.
Who doesn't love a good Las Vegas buffet, especially if there's seafood?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I can have a plate full of crab legs for like $5. Hot diggity.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, it's not that way anymore. But yeah, Circus Circus, of course, was a big hit for me because not only did I like to sit at a slot machine, but then a circus is going on around me. Of course, as a kid, I wasn't sitting at a slot machine, but...
Circus Circus was one of the only kid-friendly places on the Strip, and it had live circus performers on top of that. This is the largest permanent circus in the world. Circus Circus opened in 1968 with a casino on its first floor and carnival games on the second floor. The casino was designed by Risman and Risman Associates in a circus tent structure formed from steel and concrete. The tent-shaped roof was made from a plexiglass material painted white and hot pink. Trained monkeys roamed the casino, and an elephant named Tanya would throw dice and pull slot machine handles with her trunk. A hotel wouldn't be added until 1972, and this was a 15-story tower with 409 rooms. Jay Sarno and Stanley Mallon were the original owners, and they eventually leased operations to Bill Bennett and William Pennington after authorities started connecting the original owners to organized crime.
Sarno had previously opened Caesar's Palace. He had intended for this casino to be like a Roman circus. But then he decided he wanted it to be a circus. And that is where the name came from.
I love that.
I loved it so much. I'm like, Kelly, come here quick. I got to tell you this. Because I had no idea. I just thought that they called it circus to, I don't know, play on the name for that. It, you know, it's a circus, come on down. But it literally is. It's a circus. It's not like
not
the
Roman
circus. The new owners built another tower of rooms in 1975 and added an RV park in 1979. And for years, I don't know if it's still the case, it quite possibly could be, only RV park on the strip. More rooms and towers were added through the years, and eventually an amusement park opened in 1993. The resort was acquired by MGM Mirage in 2005 and is currently owned by Phil Ruffin. He has been renovating and has plans to possibly turn the RV park into a swimming pool complex. The Clown on the Roadside sign, which I think most people know, it rises 123 feet. He's known as Lucky, of course. What else could you call him in Las Vegas? This is one of the most photographed signs in Las Vegas. And I'm sure anybody who's been to Las Vegas, you've seen him. It's very cool.
Many people staying at Circus claim to hear phantom noises and have other weird things happen, possibly due to homicides. A Vietnamese couple was found stabbed to death in their hotel room after a robbery gone wrong in 2018. They were part of a Vietnamese tour group, and when they didn't show up for the Grand Canyon tour, hotel staff were asked to do a welfare check. The couple had multiple stab wounds. It was thought that it could be a murder-suicide because nobody had entered the room after the couple did. But eventually, a suspect was arrested.
Another homicide was said to have taken place in room 123, and there were two victims, a mother and her son. Unfortunately, it was later determined that the mother had killed her son and then took her own life. As an aside, interesting that the sign is the same height in feet as that room number, 123 feet on the sign, room 123. I don't know if it means anything, but we're into the paranormal and the weird, and I watch numbers all the time. This room is said to be haunted by the mother and son. Guests staying in the room claim to hear whispers, many times saying the words, "Help me." Words are sometimes written on the mirror in the bathroom, which, you know, Kelly, we could kind of debunk that as other previous guests fooling around. You can write on a mirror and then when it steams up later, it'll show up. We've watched this getting debunked on Ghost Hunters. Another guest ran into a woman and her young son who seemed to be frantically looking for someone. When asked who this was, the woman said they were looking for Robert, possibly her husband. The pair then disappeared. That's how she knew this is a little weird. Furniture moves around on its own, and a little boy's apparition has been seen in the hallway near room 123. And then finally, we have the specific casino that Colin wanted to hear about. It's a very, very cool location. You can't miss it. It sticks out on the strip. You can see it from a plane. I mean, you just look out there and it's a pyramid, the Luxor.
It sure is. Rising along the strip is a very unusual sight, a giant black pyramid. This is a casino named the Luxor, and it is the third largest pyramid in the world.
That blows my mind.
I know.
It's amazing.
Giza claims the two largest pyramids, but the Luxor does have a claim to fame that neither of these pyramids has. The most powerful man-made light in the world. This is a beam that shoots up into the night sky from the tip of the pyramid. The light is known as the Luxor Sky Beam and is generated by using curved mirrors to collect the light from 39 xenon lamps and focusing the light waves into one intense narrow beam that can be seen up to 275 miles away. The beam was activated for the first time on the night of October 14th, 1993, when the resort had a pre-opening party.
They had to have picked it because that's my birthday, I'm sure. If I would have known, I would have been there for that, especially... That light is so cool to see. You can see it from a long distance away.
Absolutely.
Now, it isn't as intense today because they don't fire up all of those lamps anymore. I don't know if there's some kind of regulation or something about it, maybe. But yeah, it is amazing to see that beam shooting up from the top of that pyramid. Inside the area that the very top of the pyramid where all those lamps come together, 300 degrees Fahrenheit in there.
Yikes.
Sometimes can get up to 500. They only have two people that keep an eye on all that. And I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they put a special suit on or if they like run in quick and then come back out. I'm not sure.
Run in quick. Here, flip the switch.
Run out quick. You got to do it in 10 seconds.
Dude, run. The Luxor is the first place that I actually saw the Blue Man Group.
Oh, very cool.
Loved it. Actually saw them 3 times. And 1 time got to go up on stage with them. Super fun. Loved their percussion group.
That makes sense because you love drums.
I sure do.
Didn't you mention to me that you had a friend that just stayed at the Luxor and he showed pictures of his room and they actually have the curtains because, I mean, it's a pyramid. So if you are staying in a room and you've got a window there, it's slanted.
Right.
So the curtains are what, pinned to the wall or something?
Yeah, that was my old vet, Dr. Tom Greek. He was there for something. I don't know what, but he showed the picture inside or a little video inside the room. And yep, it's slanted and the curtains are just adhered to the window. So I guess they just slide back and forth. I don't know. He didn't open them.
How interesting. I never even thought about it until you'd said, look at the video here and were telling me about it. Because I'm like, oh, because otherwise they would just be kind of hanging into the room and look kind of weird, I guess. Or maybe I thought that they didn't even have curtains, but you wouldn't want to stay in a room where you don't have curtains. So.
Definitely not.
At least nobody wants me to stay in a room that doesn't have any curtains.
Oh, stop it. We've heard stories of curses connected to pyramids. Is it possible that this modern pyramid has a curse too? It is quite possible.
The Luxor was built in 1993 by Circus Enterprises. How very cool. I had no idea that they were connected to each other. Veldon Simpson was the architect, and the casino was named for the city of Luxor in Egypt with a plan for a 30-story tall pyramid featuring Egyptian theming inside. This included an indoor Nile River ride. It's no longer there. Before they put the Nile River in there, they had this initial idea that was pretty cool. They were going to have a moat and then a real casino riverboat that was traversing it before they built the Luxor. That was the initial idea that they went with. And I love casino riverboats, so I would have thought that was great. It wouldn't make much sense in the middle of the desert in Las Vegas, but hey. Various replicas of Egyptian artifacts were brought in as part of the decor. The exterior was formed from metal and glass. Construction cost $375 million. 2 hotel towers were added later, and the casino has undergone numerous renovations, many that have taken away much of the Egyptian theming. So it looks like a pyramid on the outside. You get inside and almost everything is gone. All of those replicas of Egyptian artifacts have been pulled out. Thankfully, they donated them to various museums in the area, so they're still being used for that. A tram was added to connect the Luxor to the Excalibur Casino and Mandalay Bay Casino, because they're all right next to each other and they're all owned by Vici Properties. They bought the Luxor and MGM operates the resort. A lot of those casinos are all kind of connected and owned by the same thing together.
The Luxor has a reputation for having a high number of murders, suicides, and other deaths, some of which took place during construction. Because of that, people claim the place must be cursed. We mentioned Tupac Shakur earlier. He was staying at the Luxor at the time of his death. A casino worker was killed by her boyfriend in plain sight of people in 2012. A man fell from the 10th floor. An employee at the Luxor Food Court was killed in 2007 in the Luxor parking garage when a homemade pipe bomb exploded. He was apparently targeted by 2 other men who were apprehended and given life sentences in 2010.
I didn't read the whole story, so I don't know why they targeted him. But apparently what they did is this homemade bomb was underneath a red Solo cup that they'd put on top of his car. And good so when grief. He went to lift it off the car, the bomb went off.
Las Vegas has a huge number of suicides every year for obvious reasons, and the Luxor seems to have the greatest number of them. Another reason why there may be issues at the casino is the fact that there is only one Sphinx guarding the entrance. Egypt of the ancient world always held to a practice of having a pair of Sphinxes to guard entrances. Could it be that this lack of tradition has allowed something dark to get through?
And that's why whenever you see an Egyptian motif mausoleum, it will have the 2 sphinxes on either side of the door there. I don't think I've ever seen a mausoleum with Egyptian iconography that doesn't have 2. So the fact that there's just that huge giant sphinx sitting in the middle of the desert in Egypt makes you wonder, huh, what's happening there that there's only the 1 sphinx there? Most paranormal experiences take place in the pyramid part of the resort rather than the towers. There's 1 room here that has a poltergeist, and that is room 30018. The spirit here doesn't like to share its space. Nearly every morning at 8:30 a.m., a metallic noise rings out in the room. Here at the Luxor, a blonde spirit known as the Luxor Blonde haunts several rooms, and she likes to make her presence known by strangling people in their beds.
Oh, so she's a friendly spirit.
She definitely likes to get their attention. Guests awaken when they feel hands tightly gripping their necks and are shocked to find that they are either alone or their partner is sound asleep and not trying to murder them in the bed. Some of these people describe the experience as being more like a very vivid dream, and during the dream they see that it is a blonde woman trying to strangle them. Other people claim to have intense chest pains.
Other activity includes the pounding of doors by unseen fists. Guests get up to yell at whoever's awakened them from slumber to find the hallways empty. Shadow figures have been seen out of the corner of the eye. Construction workers who died have appeared in the quieter parts of the hotel. Acrid smells out of nowhere invade the senses, and lights sometimes flicker on their own, which was in the video that Dr. Greek posted.
Which is so interesting because I did this research and got those notes after you had told me that he had these flickering lights on his video. And then when I was reading this and adding it, I went, holy crap, she said that he had flickering lights. And it was just like, oh, there must be something going on with the electrical here. So now it makes you wonder, do you know what floor he was on?
I do not, but I could ask him.
You should.
Another female ghost supposedly walks through the halls of the 12th, 13th, and 14th floors and likes to push people or breathe down their necks. Visitors say not to look over railings because something malevolent tries to convince you to jump.
Now, for me, that's just a normal occurrence. I think that's why I have a fear of, I don't really call it necessarily a fear of heights as much as it is of falling. Because anytime I'm like looking over something like that, I keep getting those horrible thoughts in my head. It's just jump, just do it. So I think that's just like something that happens to some people.
You never told me that you have those thoughts. Oh my gosh.
It's not like I'm thinking it, but it's just like, I don't know. I get this weird feeling like, and I think it's because I'm afraid I'm going to fall. But sometimes you get this feeling like, what would it feel to like jump? And no, you can't fly. You're not Superman. That was the other episode.
Yeah, I like tall roller coasters, but I don't like being up high in a hotel and looking down. The MGM Grand, I was up on a really, really, the new MGM Grand, on a really tall floor, and it had floor-to-ceiling windows. That was a bit disconcerting looking out at the Strip. I'd stayed far back from the edge.
You want to know what's really disconcerting when you go up in the stratosphere?
Oh, heck no. Ain't doing that.
Uh-uh. And the windows go all the way around, so you can walk.
They tilt out.
Yes, so you can walk out onto that tilted part. And I was brave enough to do that. And then some little kid starts coming up and jumping right next to me. And I'm thinking, are you insane? I almost strangled the child.
Like the blonde.
Yes. I was almost the Luxor blonde up in the stratosphere. And they have a roller coaster on top of that darn thing. And people actually ride it. I'm like, oh, hell no. A woman left a review reporting, here's the best part. My fiancé screamed for me to come here when I was brushing my teeth. I came out and asked what's wrong. He looked stunned and couldn't speak. He said a little girl just appeared in the room and asked for help. Wow, now we have a ghost in our room. He woke me later to ask if I could hear singing.
Oh my goodness.
Well, if she's singing, I don't think she's going to hurt you.
She just wanted a little friendly interaction.
Yeah.
Another review from December 2016 said that a woman woke up when she felt a hand on her face. She jumped out of bed and saw that her husband was awake and looked terrified. He told her that he had just seen a blonde woman wearing a hat, possibly a beret, and that she had been standing at the bedside and then she disappeared. After that, they decided to sleep in the other bed in the room. Their peace didn't last long as the woman was awakened once again, but this time she felt someone wrapping the covers tight around her and leaning against her back. They told the concierge about their experiences the next day, and she didn't seem surprised. She gave them a new room in one of the towers.
I find it interesting that they thought if they slept in the other bed, it would fix the ghost problem.
Right.
The ghost is kind of in the room. I don't think it cares what bed you're in. That just cracked me up. Maybe they thought the sheets over there would be more protective than the ones in this bed, because sheets are supposed to protect you. That's why whenever people tell a story about like her, she had those sheets wrapping tighter around her, or people get the sheets pulled off of them. It's like, wait, that's supposed to be your shield. When the ghost is able to tamper with that, it can be very terrifying. Because we know the sheets are the safest thing in the room.
And now we sleep without them on half the time.
I know. Although I rarely can sleep without a sheet on me or have like my foot sticking out from underneath it. And I think it just goes back to that childhood fear of something's going to grab me. Another review reported, running the risk of sounding insane, I swear my room was haunted. I always felt like there was a shadowy figure just at the edge of my vision, and this creeped me out like nothing before.
Casinos in Vegas can be a ton of fun, as long as you don't mind losing some money. They might have an added bit of fun for those of us that enjoy a good ghost story and a little love tap from an apparition. Are these Vegas casinos haunted?
That is for you to decide. Well, if any of you have stayed at any of the hotels, especially along the Strip, and had something unusual happen to you, we'd love to hear about it.
Yes, indeed.
Really anywhere in Las Vegas, because you know every place around there's got to be haunted. I don't know if they still have the Titanic. I can't remember if it was at the Luxor or one of these other hotels, but they had the exhibit there. And, you know, those Titanic artifacts are supposed to be haunted as all get out. We'd love to have you guys go check out our website at historyghostbump.com. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that at historyghostbump@gmail.com. We did hear from Jennifer. She says, random thoughts. Hi, ladies. Still binging on old and new episodes as fast as I can. I was listening to an older episode while working today, and a comment regarding yet another lady in white made me chuckle. And then my mind led me down a rabbit hole away from my work, and yet related to it, as to why some spirits manifest in white or color. So my squirrel brain dove into my books on color therapy, chakras, and yes, marketing. Colors are important in marketing, I'm sure you know. Yes, indeed. You hear all kinds of suggestions about what colors you need to have on your logo and all this other stuff and your cover art for your podcast. And we just went with what we wanted. I don't really care. I found it interesting that white, in some theories and practice, represents the soul itself. I remember some references to red apparitions and purple manifestations throughout your episodes. Red can represent passion, survival, and courage, also anger. Purple can have its connection to the divine, spirituality, and awareness. It was intriguing to entertain these meanings and how apparitions may manifest and appear to different people. The why, I cannot answer. I suppose we can only speculate that. Whether it's just science or the spirit's deeper connection to the spiritual realms, kind of fun to think about. And so I just kind of responded and I said, very interesting. I know sometimes the lady in white looks that way because of a burial shroud or the fact that she was buried in her wedding dress a lot of the time in the past.
Sure.
That was the nicest dress that a woman had. So if she died young, they just put her back in her wedding dress. Fascinating to hear that white could refer to the soul, though. You know, maybe that's why they do show up as a white mist or something like that, because that's just the color of the soul.
True.
She definitely had listened to our McPike Mansion episode because that's really where we talked about spirits manifesting in color. And as people know, whenever we go in to investigate now, I'm always asking if something can manifest in a color because I want to have that experience again. And it's just never happened again, other than maybe at the Villisca ex-murder house. McPike Mansion is the place that really got us going on the color thing because the spirits manifested as different colors. It'd be great if they could tell us why. Did they choose the color? Could they represent what you found out? I said to Jen. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I believe Sarah was the one who would show up in red. They always would manifest in the same colors, too. That was interesting. So was she showing up as red because she was more passionate or was she angry? She didn't seem angry. She just because we actually captured her EVP.
Right.
And she sounded like a nice woman.
Is that you again, Sarah?
Yes.
And purple being related to something that is, you know, kind of royalty or of the spiritual world or whatever. I don't know why Gertrude chose that color. I just kind of had a feeling that maybe she enjoyed that color in life, kind of like at the Lent Mansion, the lavender lady liked to wear lavender.
Sure.
So that's kind of what she shows up in the afterlife. Very interesting thoughts. Thanks for sharing those, Jen. I want to thank you guys for tuning into this episode. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by our executive producers. What's going on, Mort?
Idle hands are the devil's workshop. Gotta keep busy.
Kelly, he hasn't been very busy out there in the cemetery. We haven't had a lot of people coming in to join. So he got his fingers into the Emporium somehow. I don't know if I left the keys out or what, but he broke in or let himself in. And he's taken over a little bit of it. Put his own little design and pictures up there.
Yeah, he wants to become more famous.
I guess so.
Hey, spookies, I finally have a new design of myself up in the Emporium.
So if you guys want to have a little piece of Mort to wear on a shirt or a hat or what have you, go and check out the HGB Emporium.
He looks quite dapper, I must say.
He does, I have to say. He did slick his hair up and put on his good suit.
I'm fabulous.
until a scout named Rafael Riviera.
It's Riviera.
That's what they named it for. They named it for Rafael Riviera. Now we know why they had that casino.
Except I don't think it's there anymore. They closed it down.
Well, you know, Rafael Rivera is not here anymore either. So I guess that's fitting.
All righty then.
He later moved to New York and became an active abolitionist.
Do they abolish apples?
Yes.
Originally, the property was owned by Charles Pops Squires.
Charles Pops! You actually probably popped it into the microphone in such a way that you don't want to if you're a professional broadcaster, Kelly.
Yeah, well, that's not me.
That's why they have pop screens. Next, we have the horseshoe. Next, we have...
The horseshoe!
Shoe-shoe horsey.
Shoe fly, don't bother me.
Oh, boy. I'm sure our listeners just love it when we break into song and make the History Goes Bump podcast into a musical.
At least we don't dance.
If we did, we actually would do better. I can dance. I can't sing. Kirk Kerkorkian. Boy, say that five times fast.
It's not Kerkorkian.
See, I can't even say it. I can't say it right one time, much less five times. Nearly every morning at 8:30 a.m., a metallic noise. I remember some references to red apparitions and purple manifestations throughout your episodes.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.